This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Stu Does America.
StuDoesMerch.com. Use the promo code STU10 to save 10% from the best conservative merch. Again, it's StuDoesMerch.com. If you're watching on YouTube, like the video right now. Subscribe to the channel. Hit the bell for notifications. Do all the things. James Polis is going to be here to talk about spirituality in a digital age. Pat Gray will be here in person to prove that he's still alive. But we start by doing climate doomism. Maybe Pat shouldn't want to be alive after all of this climate doom that we're seeing. A new study out says climate disaster coverage can perpetuate false narratives. This is from Axios. And you might think to yourself, oh, false narratives. That's probably true, right? They're saying everything's all horrible all the time and things are better than they've ever been in so many different measures of public health and disaster deaths and all these things. Of course, they're painting a really negative picture that's not really there, right? Is that what Axios is saying? Oh, no, no. Oh, no, no, you silly goose. Of course not. That's not what they're saying. They're saying that presenting people of color as victims and white people as rescuers in U.S. news coverage of climate disasters has long been a problematic trend. Apparently, some of these photos, 106 photographs they studied. Now, this is a study. They looked at 106 photographs. 106 photographs, 63 included images of people in floodwater. 33 were in shelters, but 57 showed a strong masculine hero. A lie! Because there's no such thing, as of course you know. People of color were apparently depicted as, quote, displaced migrants and women as damsels in distress, while white men were represented as saviors and caretakers. This is the sort of stuff they're looking at. They're not actually looking at solving, you know, there's derailed trains apparently all over the place blowing up. But let's make sure we focus on the news coverage of hurricanes. We also get this also from Axios, who's doing a heck of a job on the climate front right now. Something called Black Girl Environmentalist. She's rejecting climate doomism. Seems like a lovely, lovely lady, but they go into her beliefs here. Climate doomism, fatalistic messaging that nothing can be done to reverse climate change on a global scale, is easy to find on outlets like TikTok, where the baseless argument has gone viral in recent years. Is it baseless? I mean, look, I'm with you here. I don't think that we're all going to die from climate doom. But, like, the media has been telling me we're past the point of no return constantly for my entire life. Whether it was global cooling or global warming or climate change or global weirding or weather weirding, they're always telling me we're past the point of no return. They're constantly depressing children into suicide because they think they're going to die because the temperature went up by a degree or the, you know, there's 2 more inches of sea level rise over a decade. And I'm the one that's getting this wrong. Is it baseless now? That we can do something about climate change? How many times have you heard AOC say, if we don't do something right this second, the whole world's going to be lit on fire? Organizations like Black Girl Environmentalist are challenging this misinformation that feeds the argument, which they say can lead to a loss of power for the communities bearing the brunt of climate impact. So this is the thing, like they spent years trying to scare you and tell you that everything in the climate was going to turn your life into hell, and there's nothing you can do to reverse it because we've screwed up for so long. And now they're like, crap, we overplayed our hands here. Now everyone is just giving up because we keep telling them there's nothing they can do. Now they're trying to reverse this, of course. In 2021, Wanjiko Wawagotheru founded Black Girl Environmentalist, or as you probably know it, BGE, which seeks to empower black girls, women, and non-binary peoples in climate action by facilitating increased representation within the environmental disciplines. We want people to know that being in climate doesn't have to be all doom. Now, of course, if you're going to have a movement, you need to have something that you can actually do in the movement. So saying that everything is lost and climate doom is here is probably a pretty smart move here. But if you notice how, like, on the left, you get these storylines. You know, the transgender thing's been a big one lately. Maybe it's, some of the CRT type stuff. And they can't keep these narratives separate. They want to talk to you about the climate, but they have to work in non-binary throughout the entire thing. On the Black Girl Environmentalist website, Black Girl Environmentalist, a supportive community dedicated to empowering black girls, women, and non-binary people across environmental disciplines. Our goal is to create an inclusive, representative climate movement truly made of the image of all of us. And that's been the problem. Apparently, not enough non-binary people, too many binary people. If you're a binary person, screw off. I don't care if you die from climate change, but we're very worried about non-binary people. It's fascinating to see all of these narratives intersect. It's like there's a bunch of cars going to the intersection and they just keep crashing into each other. The site goes on to say it's not too late. And the concept of giving up is a privileged one. See, it's not because it's what they've been lying to us for a couple decades, saying we're too far past gone. No, that's just white privilege, apparently, talking, especially for so many already experiencing the brunt of the issue. She goes on to say, I've unfortunately come across many of in these spaces, a lack of prioritizing black voices and particularly black girls, black women and black non-binary environmentalists. You know, that's been my big complaint. How long? I've been talking about this for years. Why are there not more black non-binary environmentalists? I have a shirt that just says, why are there not more black non-binary environmentalists? I have a bumper sticker on my car. If you're ever driving down a car and you see a car and that car has a sticker that says, why aren't there more black non-binary environmentalists? You know that's me. I'm with you on this one. She goes on to say the disproportionate burden of climate change on communities of color and the lack of protection of over-policing, again, another narrative has come into the intersection, of those same neighborhoods are connected through a legacy of systemic racism, another, and environmental justice, and another car crashes in the intersection. If I'm talking about prison abolition, if I'm talking about Black Lives Matter, or another black person being slain by police, that is an environmental issue. I have to admit, I did not know that was in any way related to climate change. But I guess people get warm, they get upset, bad things happen. The same communities that are over-policed in this country are the same ones that have the least amount of trees. That is a quote. So apparently, all the liberal narratives have all coalesced into one big intersection, and everyone's just kind of bumping it. It's like Demolition Derby. Everyone's just bumping into each other, and they're all trying to fit all their talking points into every single argument they make. We are in an era of insanity, and that insanity keeps rolling and rolling and rolling. So how do you grow your money for retirement? It's not always an easy thing to do. We've kind of been brainwashed into believing the only way you can do it is to risk it in the stock market or just sports betting. I wouldn't recommend necessarily the sports betting one. The stock market can be part of your portfolio, perhaps, but that's not the only way you can do this. You can reach your financial goals and dreams without taking any of the unnecessary risks. Bank on Yourself is a better way to grow and protect your hard-earned money. This retirement plan alternative has never had a losing year in over 160 years. How's that for a record for you? They provide guaranteed, predictable growth in retirement income with no luck, skill, or guesswork required. Your plan doesn't go backward when the market tumble. You get the growth, but you don't get the downside. That's kind of cool, right? This is a tax-free retirement income. You're in control of it. You can get access to it. It's not like you have to go to a bank and be like, can you please loan me my own money for this? No, you have access to it when you need to without the government penalties or restrictions on how much you can take or when you can take it. You can get a free report on all the details on how the Bank on Yourself strategy adds guarantees, predictability and control to your financial plan. Go to bankonyourself.com/Stu, bankonyourself.com/Stu. Get your retirement under control with bankonyourself.com/Stu.
One of the best measures of how corrupt a country is how rich its leaders get while they're in office. They're not so good at passing laws or governing, but they're great at investing.
Imagine if every American could make money off of war.
In 103 days,
that position ends up gaining around 103%. So she made, you know, $2 million plus her original two, so $4
million. I signed, co-sponsored a bill and made too much voluminous flare over it that I wouldn't be seated. So I shut up. The threats that fly around are just absolutely insane.
The Blaze Originals team traveled to Washington, D.C., home to one of the most brilliant financial minds in the world, Nancy Pelosi. In our documentary, Bought and Paid For, How Politicians Get Filthy Rich, we spoke to Reps Matt Gaetz and Chip Roy, George Santos, and the bane of D.C. elites, Unusual Whales, to expose how our elected officials are beating the stock market and, more importantly, what we can do. To watch today, go to congressgetsrich.com and use code RICH to get $30 off an annual subscription to Blaze TV.
Happy to welcome James Polis to the program. He's the editor of For the American Mind and the founder of Return.life, author of Human Forever, The Digital Politics of Spiritual War. James, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Hey, Stu, how are you?
Really good. I was mentioning this as we were just coming on the air. I had The Return in my hand upstairs earlier today. It's a beautiful publication. I mean, it feels, you know, it's something like from a bygone era. Like, it's just really nice, and it's you know, beautiful to look at. It's nice to feel in your hands. I mean, what made you do this? This is going against where everything else seems to be going, which is all online and having no physical value.
Well, the past is back, and it's very pissed off. So, you know, you got to catch up. Return is where tech aligns, as we like to say. It's sort of we got a website, return.life, and then we got the print product that is it's pretty thick. It's about 150 pages, full color, full bleed, nice creamy paper, something that won't go stale before you're done reading it. So there's, I think, a huge lane right now for tech coverage. That is pro-human and pro-America and, understands the spiritual stakes that are in play as we experience this kind of global digital conflict. We're proud of the response that we're getting, and we look forward to delivering a lot more.
Yeah, it's a really cool idea. I feel like we are in that point in history where there's been a lot of things that are fleeting, right? Like, we get a lot of stuff that really just satisfies you for seconds at a time, and then you're looking for that next hit of dopamine or whatever it is. Like, we need that stuff that's going to last for a while, that's going to make people think about things more deeply, because the pace of change right now indicates a real need for that type of change. And I don't feel like right now we're not even contemplating these big questions.
Well, it's tough. I mean, these are questions that human beings are tempted to try to run away from in whatever way that they can. People forget that it wasn't that long ago when, the boob tube was the problem.
Yeah.
You'd sit down and just sort of like hit that remote and trance out. And now we've created, much, much more powerful and much more rapid ways of distracting ourselves from these ultimate questions. The irony is, these very technologies that we're building, until about whenever the iPhone came out 15 years ago, for all of human history, the only kinds of entities that were understood to be able to do what these things can do, invisible and innumerable and instantaneously communicating, were spiritual entities, angels and demons. And now we've built these things that invisibly surround us, pass through us. It's crazy. And so it's become so immense and so inescapable that it starts making ordinary people and even some extraordinary people go like, gosh, well, what's the point of being a human being? Why should I have a job? Why should I get married? Why should I have children? Why should I leave the house? Why should I leave my bed? And when you're faced with those kinds of deep questions, those ultimate questions, those are theological questions. And throughout human history, they've had theological answers. And so, there's no escape from that kind of religious reckoning about, who are we, why are we who we are, and what should we do about it. So, once you kind of realize that so much of what passes for activity today is really just kind of a scramble to escape those questions, you'll realize that they're inescapable. So we'd better get on with trying to answer them, right?
Yeah, because I think it is really, really important to answer them, because I think there is this thing that happens when a new technology comes out, where people say, well, that could go down a dark road. We should stop that. And it never works, right? Like, we never stop using that thing. I've used the Meta Quest, the virtual reality thing. And it's like, you look at that and it's like, you look at these landscapes and you could look around and it's better than any like vacation you could go on. Like you're in these perfect places. There's no effort. There's no cost. And while I don't actually think it's better, for a lot of people, it's going to present a reality that is better when it comes to AI and talking about relationships. You know, the chat bots are flirting with people now. There's going to be a certain percentage of the population that's just going to say, you know what, my life sucks. And I'm going to see this as an opportunity to make it better in easy, cheap form. And I'm going to go for it. And I'm just going to escape the human experience entirely.
Well, if only you could escape entirely, then maybe it would be a different conversation. But the reality is there is no escape. There's only the illusion of escape. Yeah. And we've been using our imaginations. We've been using our calculating minds. To try to escape from the beginning, to try to create, you know, this is a secret universe where I can do whatever I want,
yeah.
Or at least I can feel like it. And then inevitably the high wears off, or, you know, the computer crashes or whatever it is. And once again, you're brought face to face with the reality of who you are and how you wound up there. People don't like having to accept their responsibilities. People don't like having to resist sensory overload, you know, and yet we build these things that are designed to overload our senses. You know, you want to know what the soy face is that you see everywhere on the internet. It's the face of someone who's being completely, you know, saturated, almost gang raped by information, you know, and yet no matter, even though we've managed to crank that all the way to 11, break the knobs off, somehow it's still not enough. Somehow you're still know that there's one reality and that you didn't create it, and you can run from that, but you can't hide.
So how much of this, I was listening to the political rhetoric going on these days about, you know, how back in the day, you know, parents, they had these, they grew up and they got out of college and they had a house and they lived these wonderful lives. And now the kids of today, their description of themselves is that they live the toughest life in the world. And, you know, the older people screwed it all up for them. And they have to live at home with mommy until they're 28 years old, 29 years old, whatever it is. And as I was listening to that sort of rhetoric, I randomly happened to listen to Allentown by Billy Joel. And like you listen to Allentown and it's the same sort of complaints, you know, all our dads used to go to the shore every weekend and they won the Second World War. And now here we are and the unions have all left town. It was the same crap, the same type of complaints. Is there an optimism in like the fact that all the doomscape type of stuff about tech, every new innovation has given us some level of that? Should we be freaking out or is this just overblown?
It seems such a waste of time if that's what it's all about. Mm. Mama, if that's moving up, then I'm moving out.
Mm, yeah.
Nothing has changed.
Billy Joel lyric contest.
That's
we just started
right.
it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is, I'm dating myself here. Not as a sexual identity, but as right. making myself look my age. Yeah, I don't know. You know, the remarkable thing about, you know, just like the teachings of the ancient church, to grab a not so random example, is from that standpoint, the quest to perfectly dissolve into a parallel universe of our senses and our passions, to disappear into a fantasy land of our wants and feelings and pleasures. That's not new. That's not shockingly novel. And we see all these shocking new technologies. Oh, it's going to change everything. Well, no, it's not going to change the human condition. It's not going to change the human predicament. It raises the stakes. It increases the consequences of trying to conduct this escape that can never happen. And it can ratchet up the amount of punishment, the amount of suffering, yes. But it's really not all that shocking and new when you think about it. And it's that kind of perspective that I think gives people the opportunity to remember that actually, yes, like we used to be very confident as Americans in our relationship with our technologies. We were not afraid to roll up our sleeves and get our hands dirty, put our hands on our stuff,
yeah,
and have competence and have a spiritual authority over our tools. And in fact, that's the only way that we can reestablish our authority over our tools, which are now so powerful, is we have a spiritual character. We have a spiritual identity. They do not. We are alive. They are not. And so when you look around the world at what all the, you know, powerful countries are doing to try to restore digital sovereignty, that's what they're doing. The Chinese are going to Taoism and the Russians are going to Russian Orthodoxy. And, you know, the Vatican is very excited about trying to use its authority to tell Europe how to, you know, well, if they can't invent these things, at least they can regulate them. And here in the, you know, in the, whether it's in the UK or here in the US, the, you know, ground zero of this, whether you want to call it a cold civil war or whatever, a couple of different terms flying around, that's what it's over. You know, it's what spiritual authority is going to define our regime and use that authority to ensure that technology is mastered in a certain way. So for ordinary Americans who aren't very excited about the idea of like, well, you know, people who think there are an infinite number of genders and you can't vote them in, you can't vote them out, they're going to create a new religion and that's how we're going to control technology. If you don't like that, well, there's good news. I mean, take Bitcoin for an example. Mm-hmm. It's had its ups and downs. It doesn't really matter, you know, what the dollar value is. That's not the power of the technology. And this is a technology that's fully developed right now. I published a book on Bitcoin, for sale in Bitcoin, written on chain, totally circumvented all of the, you know, publishing industry, financial industry. You don't need it. You can put your hands on that technology right now, create and sell and exchange and share goods and services that strengthen our form of government, that strengthen our way of life, that strengthen our humanity. This is just one example of how you don't need to be an expert, you don't need to be a blue check, you don't need to, you know, be credentialed or get your sort of woke stamp of approval. You can just be a regular American willing to take a small step in a direction that feels new to restore that kind of authority, manual competence, and spiritual authority over your technology so that we can be generative with it instead of replacing ourselves or trying to, you know, beam us up into some metaverse.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that one of the things that's so exciting about, you know, Bitcoin as an example is it sucks you out of this world where all of these outside forces can have so much influence on your day-to-day life, right? Like Bitcoin really does, it's running parallel to everything else, you know? You know, we've been, and I think it's frustrating the coverage that you see of it now, where we've been talking about Bitcoin for years and years and years and years. I'm certainly not as much of an expert as you are, but like these ups and downs have happened. The first time I bought Bitcoin, I remember within, I don't know, 3 weeks, it was down 70%. Now I was like, typical, but that was $600 to $200. And now look where it is. And the same people who told me that that bubble was a burst and the 2017 was a burst, bubble had burst, and the 2021 bubble has burst are telling me there's no future for this. This is over. Finally, we come to the end of these crazy people on the internet talking about their fake, you know, internet coins. What is the future for crypto? Is there something where the, you know, the American people and people around the globe are going to be able to find a consumer-facing product that they're going to really be able to utilize in this realm?
Well, I think they're there right now. I mean, I think, you know, you can use Bitcoin in this way. That's why the SEC doesn't like it.
Yeah.
You know, at first, the coiners were like, oh, Gary Gensler, like, he's taught classes on Bitcoin. He's going to get it.
Yeah.
And, you know, oh, he got it all right. He understood exactly what was at stake. Yeah, and so did the folks whose names we don't know who are operating in that world. You know, look, I mean, the spiritual dimension to this is really profound, and what you have to understand is that technologically and socially, money and information are converging into a single entity, and that is something that has tremendous power—not just productive power, but power of control, power to stop people from freely associating. And from working together and investing their spirit, their life force, their soul into what it is that they generate. Things that lift up their community, lift up their spirits, and make them not slaves of their technologies, not slaves of their government, not slaves of their senses, trying to disappear into some crazy sensorium, not slaves of their passions. You know, in America, it's supposed to be like, follow your passion. But, you know, I mean, you see what happens. You see, like, how
terrible
this...
Terrible advice.
Yes, it's terrible advice. You know, you are not what you want. Mm. And in a society where you're taught that, like, well, you know, it's okay to be whatever gender you can imagine because you are what you want, mm-hmm. you know, technology then becomes like a tool that, well, you know, if I can't dream my way into being what I want, if the era of John Lennon and Willy Wonka is over, you know, imagination ain't what it used to be. It's now all about the memory of machines. And if you can't, you know, you can't use violence to get what you want, that's a no-no now. Well, you can use these tools, you know, you can physically sort of change yourself into some kind of cyborg. Yeah. And that's kind of how you think about your purpose and your meaning and your identity in this world. That is a radical break with everything that we have understood being an American to mean, and being a human being to mean, but to say nothing of being, you know, a child of God. So these are the stakes. And when you look at the use case for Bitcoin, you know, the use case isn't like, well, now I can buy, you know, my Happy Meal with invisible money, you know. No, this is a matter of if you really want those fundamental elements of our lives together, our free association, our religious observance, our constitutional government, our human nature. If you want those things to survive into the digital age, you have to make sure that we take digital tools and bring them to heel and make them kneel before what we hold sacred.
It's about mastery. It's about who masters who.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, we've spent the last 15 years or so just with a giant experiment of like, what if we give up that mastery? What happens? Let's give it a whirl as a civilization. And it seems like that experiment's not working out all that well.
No, it's not. And of course, you know, mastery now has a bad name, like, oh, this is reminiscent of slavery, so you must strike it from the codex.
Yeah.
Like, well, no, this is a mastery about like the fullness of competence, you know, like a real fluency and a real a level of relationship of intimate understanding that arises not from, you know, not because you read it somewhere or it was handed down to you by a bureaucrat, you know. It's not following, checking the boxes. It's through your experience, and it's through the way that you attune your experience and you craft your experience by really being the master of your will, you know, so that your will isn't just sort of flopping around chasing after one desire or seeking sensory overload. It's been purified in a way, focused and disciplined. And when you focus and discipline the will and you reorient the will, frankly, toward the heart and not toward trying to become an expert in whatever, then you can approach technology in a much different way. And your whole concept of what technology is and how it should work and how you perceive it and how you understand the risks and the rewards, how you understand how to discern whether or not a certain use is going to redound to your benefit or whether it's going to undermine you, whether it's going to undermine your spiritual health or your physical health or your life prospects. All that can change if you change what's going on in your will and in your heart first.
Yeah, it's fantastic stuff. James Polis, editor for The American Mind, founder of Return.life, and author of Human Forever, The Digital Politics of Spiritual War. Make sure you pick that up. James, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Anytime, Stu.
Meghan Markle, the actress on Suits, who eventually became a princess and now I don't think is anymore or something, but we still talk about her more than ever. She's very upset and overwhelmed by a portrayal on South Park. To give you a little, what could she possibly be upset about? What could South Park possibly say about someone? They're such nice guys. Let me give you a taste of what happened.
Damn it, now the prince is playing polo on the lawn.
We are here because privacy is a basic human right. How many more princes and his wives have to live in this nightmare?
Hey, can you two f***ing keep it down?
Hey, you ever heard of a thing called privacy?
Yeah, nobody gives a f***. Will you two just shut up and go away?
Apparently did not, they didn't treat her very well. So Meghan Markle a little upset at that one. There's a new climate-friendly fuel is out, and it can really help you. And the only issue with it, you can save the climate, but you're going to get cancer too, for sure. I mean, it's definite cancer. You're going to have like more cancer. You're going to have more cancer in your body weight than actual you. You're going to be more cancer than human. But hey, it's environmentally friendly. The former head of the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences says the kind of risk we're talking about with this fuel is obscene. 250,000 times greater than the level usually considered acceptable by the EPA. But it's climate friendly, so screw you. Climate is our god now. Who cares how much cancer you have, just to let you know. And there's a sci-fi magazine that has suspended submissions. Now, this is one of those magazines, they would take your cool story, maybe you're working on at home and you had a great idea and you send it in, they might send you a few bucks if they use it. Well, what's happening is everyone's just getting ChatGPT to write new stories. I mean, again, part of me admires this stuff. It's a great idea. You just send it, you're just flooding them with just nonsensical crap churned out by ChatGPT, hoping to get paid for it. And I think that's smart. I got to start doing more of that here, honestly. Why am I thinking about these monologues? I did that one monologue that I had ChatGPT write a few weeks ago. I'm just going to start doing that all the time. I just constantly, just going to be like weird things where I tell you that I love you oddly in the middle. Maybe I threaten your life, call you Hitler. That's, if that happens, it's, don't blame me. Blame ChatGPT. I'm joined now by Pat Gray, host of Pat Gray Unleashed right here on Blaze TV, purveyor of Kexi cookies at Kexi.com, the best cookies you will ever eat. Pat, how's it going?
Well, thank you.
The reason I ask you that is because I thought you might say you were dead.
No, I am not.
No, you're not.
Those rumors are greatly exaggerated. Well, not greatly, but slightly exaggerated.
Just a little bit. I mean, you missed a couple days of work.
I did, yeah.
And it was, I got to say, actually, like, it's, as someone, maybe one of the few who care about your well-being, it was scary. That was, like, legitimately scary.
Yeah.
What happened?
It was. It's strange because I went into the hospital for something complete. I mean, the worst pain I've ever had in my life. And it was brought on by kidney stones. And so the initial thing I thought was, okay, I'm just, you know, I felt like crap because I hurt so bad. But once they calmed that down, you know, with the morphine and whatever else, they started doing all kinds of other tests because that's just what they do when you come into the emergency room. And so I was feeling, I thought I was coming to work in the morning. And a doctor came in and said, you are a very, very sick man. And, you know, they had immediately admitted me to the intensive care unit and acted like, you know, I was at death's door. It's weird because I didn't feel like I was at death's door.
Right.
You know,
I
didn't feel like you would imagine you might be feeling if you're at death's door.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
so
a lot of pain is one thing.
Yeah. But I had this serious, serious pain, but I've had that before and I wasn't at death's door. So when they found out that there was acute kidney injury, and then on top of that, the really bad diabetes that I didn't know about. So I'm just eating freely, and there's no insulin in my life at that point. And so my glucose level shot up to 700.
And that's
750.
Not good,
it's
right?
It's a tad high when it should be
normal?
Around 100.
Okay. All right.
130.
You try not to have things that are in the sevens when you need them in the ones. That's bad.
And my ACI, which is the three-month average, I don't know how they figure 3 months when they just took it just now, but that should be 6. Mine was 13, which you might recognize also as more than double.
Yep.
So it was really bad. Plus, I was severely dehydrated. I mean, a bunch of things all at once.
And they said the words kidney failure.
Yeah, almost complete kidney failure.
Which, you know, to me just strikes me as like you're dead. Like if that happens, you just are dead. And yet here you are, which
here
is very good.
And the kidneys bounced back really well.
Okay.
So I went from almost no function to almost normal function. And they said it'll probably continue to heal. And it's hard to get your kidney function back, depending on how it happened in the first place. And I'm not exactly sure how I got the acute injury in the first place, but it also led to an infection there. And so the infection was really bad, plus the diabetes, plus the kidney stones, plus the dehydration.
I mean, you're
a mess. Not good.
You're
it was
a
not
mess,
a good
man.
Time. Yeah, I'm a mess.
You're a mess.
Yeah, just a mess.
So what does this mean? Does it mean like medication? Do you have to do
So it means insulin injections four times a day.
Four times a day. That sounds like fun.
It's a lot of fun.
Four needles a day. Are they how, like, because I've had needles before where like they're the really bad ones.
They're short and skinny.
Is it the little pen? It's like a little pen type of situation? Those aren't too bad.
They're not bad. And sometimes I barely feel it. Burns a little bit once in a while, but
not the worst.
Those are not a big deal. It's just the time and the effort and the change in lifestyle that you have to eat completely differently and all of that. It's a little bit irritating.
Can you walk me through the eating changes? Because, you know, you are a guy who enjoys his food, enjoys
junky food.
Some junky food.
Not so good for me food.
We did a show together and we did spoons every week where we would try out crazy junk foods and you like them a lot.
I do.
You know, you like sweets. You obviously.
I don't like vegetables.
You don't like vegetables.
That's not a good combination.
You're closely associated
you're aware of that.
With a cookie company.
Right.
Yeah, so
which I'll no longer be eating much of.
That's
hard.
A big change.
Yeah, it is.
What do they tell you you have to do?
Well, I got to limit carbs to 45 carbs per meal. So 45.
That's not a lot at all.
That's not a lot. Like, it goes, an orange is 30.
Oh, God.
So I've kind of lived for oranges and apples now instead of ice cream and candy or whatever.
I remember we had Penn Jillette on a while ago, and he wrote a book about his. He lost, I don't know, over 100 pounds.
Yeah, a ton.
And one of the ways he did it was for, like, I mean, you know, Penn Jillette, I think he'd even describe himself as an extremist. Like, he does things and he goes all the way.
Yeah.
And the thing he did was he ate potatoes for, like, every meal for 2 months.
Wow.
As many potatoes as you want. But, like, think of how sick of potatoes you would be at the end of that.
Unbelievably
sick. He said by the time he got to the place where he was adding in other foods, like, you know, a piece of celery would be incredible. Like, a strawberry would blow his mind. I mean, you realize that, like, we are just so used to good food and so much bounty in this country that we don't even contemplate how good these things actually are. They can be.
And you know me, though. I didn't pay attention to any of that. Yeah. I didn't care. I once remarked that I liked the fact in New York restaurants that they have to list the calories and fat content.
Right.
Because I would always choose, if there were similar things, I'd choose the one with more calories because it must have tasted better.
And that's actually just a really good tip.
Yeah.
It does work.
It's a good rule of thumb and it does work. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I've had to completely change and rearrange.
How hard has it been? I mean, it's only been like a week, right?
It's been going on two now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's been hard. I'm starting to lose that, you know, really bad craving that you think you have to have some kind of really decadent dessert every night. So I'm losing that a little bit now. It's getting easier just to deal with the oranges, apples, or a banana from time to time.
That's incredible. So did you have any, I mean, again, you said you were near death's door. You were like on the front porch of death.
Yes, I was knocking, but they didn't open the door.
They didn't open the door, thankfully. Yeah. You don't want them to open the
door.
Did you have any, like, big, like, life revelations? Did you have any moments where you're like, gosh, I want to change this, or I want to do this in the future? Anything like that hit you in that moment?
I think I decided I needed to watch more NFL football. I think that's what really
occurred. And it goes away almost immediately.
Almost immediately. Yeah. I got to watch one stupid game after it.
Yeah.
So.
And that was, I will agree with you, a stupid game. A very stupid game.
That is something we haven't even talked about since you got back.
It's torture, man.
That had to hurt.
I mean, it was worse than what you went through. Let's put it that way. Watching the Eagles lose was worse.
When they had such a great chance. I mean, they had a really good opportunity. I suppose you whined and cried at the call at the end of the game.
I didn't really.
I didn't either, and everybody was so upset about it. He himself admitted it.
Yep, he himself admitted it, but, you know, the Eagles coach said
stand-up
called
guy,
it.
Though. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, you got to like, I liked him more after watching. That's Bradbury, James Bradbury we're talking about on the holding call. And, like, I think the frustration with that call in particular is you hate to see a Super Bowl end like that. A great game where, like, it basically destroyed the end of the game that would have been really exciting. Now, we don't know. The Eagles may have scored, but they might not have.
They only had, what, a minute and a half or something?
Yeah, a minute and a half. They would have to go the length of the field to get they could have tied it with a field goal.
You may
have overtime. But at least you would have had that drama at the end. And I think that's why, again, I think it was a 50-50 call in that often doesn't get called. It was not a lot of contact. And you see after Bradbury holds him, you know, Schuster takes 4 or 5 steps before Mahomes even releases it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the ball was so far overthrown, it didn't really impact the play all that much. So that part, it was frustrating. But honestly, like, you know, I was in the stands. I couldn't really tell at that point what happened. My frustration was more about how the Eagles put themselves in that position, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
You are up by 2 scores at halftime. Your defense can't come up with one stop, not one stop.
Yeah.
They had their chances, that's for sure. Frustrating. And you hate to see that. It's like it's so close. And it's like one of those things where you have a team that's young like this. You got a young quarterback who seems to be on the verge of superstardom, and you got a really good offense.
But you could make a case he outplayed Mahomes.
Oh, I think he did.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about the 2 touchdowns, or at least 2 of the touchdowns that Mahomes threw. I mean, none of them were difficult throws.
No.
These guys were absolutely wide open.
Yeah, he was throwing bombs to people.
Yeah.
And he threw them open, too.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
He
was incredible.
That one, 45-yarder or whatever that he threw in the first half, he threw that receiver open.
Yeah. I mean, and I think arguably it was the best game of his career, which is saying quite a bit in a big spot to do that, which is also why it's really frustrating, right? You get the best game of your career. You get two playoff games that are almost the easiest path you could possibly have to get to the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Your team plays really, really well, and you come out of that with a loss. And it's like, it's easy to say, hey, they'll get back there. But, you know, Dan Marino said that too.
Right.
And never showed up in the game again. Did. So that's sort of terrifying.
Yeah.
You've set me off on a tangent. Now you've made me sad. Before we go, just talking about contests I don't really want to think about. The presidential election is coming up in 2024. Mm. We're already at the point where we have three candidates in on the Republican side. None of note on the Democratic side, and that includes Joe Biden. A story came out today, or actually, it was yesterday, maybe, or the day before, that said, Joe Biden might not run. And there's a bunch of bigwigs in the Democratic Party starting to plan for the fact that maybe he will not pull the trigger on this run.
Interesting. I don't know what their alternative is. The Washington Post maybe talked about this. The Washington Post had a story last week and listed their top 10 Democrat candidates for 2024. What a weak field that is. I mean, when you're number two guy, first, of course, was Biden. Number two was Pete Buttigieg. That's your second guy. Number three is Kamala Harris, who has a 1.5% approval rating. I mean, she's nobody likes her, not even Democrats. I don't even remember who was four.
I think five was Gavin Newsom.
Five was Gavin Newsom.
Four was Jared Polis, the governor of Colorado, who
and nobody knows
I would
who
say
he
nobody's
is.
Heard of him, right?
No, nobody's heard of
him. He has a somewhat interesting profile of a potential VP, maybe, but like no one even knows who the guy is.
No, right.
You know, that bench is bad. And you know, Buttigieg, if, let's say he didn't take this job as transportation secretary and he went on instead to, I don't know, work in the private sector and, you know, have a political action committee. Maybe you could understand him being there.
Maybe.
His term as transportation secretary, which is not a job you advance to the presidency off of.
Right.
This term has been terrible. It's been filled with catastrophes.
There's people talking about impeaching him.
Yes.
I have never heard of anybody mentioning, hey, you know who we need to impeach is the transportation secretary. You got to be doing a really bad job for that to start swirling around in the atmosphere. That's bad.
You've been following this stuff for a long time. You have a really good memory of history, and maybe you've gone through this exercise, but I did this the other week. Can you name any other transportation secretaries other than maybe Elaine Chao, who is the only reason we know her is because she was married to Mitch McConnell? Mm-hmm. Who else? Can you think of anybody else that's ever had this job?
Nah. Probably not.
Right. The only one I eventually came up with was Ray LaHood. And the only reason I remember him, and you might remember him as well, is because he was the guy during the Obama stimulus plan. He was out there a lot during that period arguing for, you know, shovel-ready jobs. That was it.
What was Rick Perry's job in
He was energy, wasn't he?
Is it energy? Okay, then I don't know any others.
It's incredible.
I don't know a single other one.
The only one, I went through the whole list. The only other one anyone had ever heard of was Andy Card, who the only reason we know him is because he became chief of staff and was the guy whispering into Bush's ear on 9/11 telling him that this had happened. But he was previously transportation secretary. But no one knew him from that.
No
one knows any of these people.
Not at all.
And he's your number two. That is incredible. It's an embarrassment and something. It's like their field is in the same field, like area as your kidneys. It's just they're just not in good shape.
We're right.
Not in good shape.
Exactly.
Pat Gray Unleashed. Make sure to watch his show every day. And I will say, it's on Blaze TV, of course, blazetv.com/Stu. Promo code is Stu. And buy Kexi cookies, because now, I mean,
there's going to be some extras.
Yeah, a decent amount of these things, and now they need to be sold to you.
Yeah.
So
go
to kexi.com and get the best cookies you're ever going to have. Pat, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Okay, so here's what happened. A lot of people have the, you know, official state birds and state, I don't know, flags and rocks and I don't know, whatever else they have. New Mexico is going to become the first state to have an official aroma, which is a very odd thing to do. They are saying it's something about hatch chilies burning in the fall or something. Green chilies roasting in the fall could be the new New Mexico scent. I think if they're going to go with an official scent, they should go with blue methamphetamine. I mean, that's the only thing anyone knows New Mexico for at this point is Breaking Bad. So just go with the blue methamphetamine. I think some other states should jump into this. Perhaps the official scent of South Carolina could be women past their prime. Throwing that out there. Maybe in Vermont, old politicians and weed. That has a nice smell kind of together. Nevada, old G-strings and broken dreams. The scent of broken dreams as you go through Nevada is just absolutely wonderful. Delaware, I don't know. You could go with like the mummified remains of a guy who says he's president riding on Amtrak. Could be that. You could go with a Hunter Biden option, just like hookers and blow. You could go with that as well. And then New Jersey, you know, maybe it's like Chris Christie sweating on a beach chair. That's the official scent. And that, I will say, that's the one that really does smell like New Jersey. When you go there, you're like, is Chris Christie sweating on a beach chair nearby? That's what the whole state smells like. It's wonderful, especially this time of year. Have a great weekend and stop thinking about Chris Christie sweating in a beach chair.